Afternoon, Council. It's not often we can say good afternoon. It's usually good morning. But we're happy to see both of you here today in a case that's familiar to all of us, Sierra versus Kanji Holding, 094008. Mr. Sobel?
Thank you. May it please the Court. Stephen M. Sobel for Defendant Appellant Kanji Holding. This case of first impression arises from the imposition of nearly $500,000 in penalties, including attorney's fees and costs, on Kanji Holding, a professional developer of power plants, in a case brought under the citizen suit plaintiff provisions of the Clean Air Act. In this case, the owner of the power plant, Franklin County Power, obtained a valid PSD permit from Illinois EPA in 2001. A full year before Kanji had even been incorporated. Unbeknownst to everyone, including IEPA, the permit had automatically expired sometime on or before February 10, 2003. But Kanji did not even become the developer of the project until March 31, 2003. The development contract required the permit owner, Franklin County Power, and its parent, EnviroPower, to maintain the validity of the PSD permit. The parties, including Kanji and the EPC contractor in this case, Black & Veatch, and all other parties, believed in good faith that the contract that they had entered into to build the power plant was a valid contract that satisfied the Clean Air Act's test for commencing construction. IEPA itself thought that the physical construction satisfied the commence construction test all the way until nearly the date that the injunction issued in this case. Only when legal remedies were exhausted in 2009 was it finally determined that both the contract and the attempted construction did not satisfy the Clean Air Act requirements. Yet Sierra Club and the District Court found that Kanji was liable for proposing to build without a permit. So what did the developer do wrong in this case? Proclaim to the world that they slyly knew how to build a power plant without a permit? They had some new scheme, some new artifice to defraud? No. Did they engage in some violation of the injunction? No. Did Kanji engage in its own program of construction at any time after it received the notice of intent to sue in January 2005? No. What did Kanji do wrong? What Kanji did was exactly what this court found, that Kanji vigorously defended its rights, it chose not to roll over, and it honored the rule of law. But Kanji is now to be punished, the district court says, because it found that Kanji was a world-class developer with prior success in building coal-fired power plants legally in other countries. It is inconceivable, the district court said, that Kanji did not know that the permit had expired. Yet it took all of us over 4 years of litigation to determine that fact, and until the district court ruled, IEPA itself on its website held out to the world that this permit was in construction, having satisfied the Clean Air Act. Now, a few months ago, Judge Posner, in the case U.S. versus Synergy, was faced with a similar issue. And to paraphrase what he concluded, the blunder of the agency was unfortunate, but the agency must live with it. So too must Sierra Club. Sierra Club, as a citizen suit plaintiff, may only stand in the shoes of the agency in pursuing this matter. They have no greater rights. Kanji was, according to the district court, was guilty of lacking good faith. But there's no evidence of bad faith. This court found that there was no willful misconduct by Kanji prior to this court's ruling. And the district court said nothing about any actions that occurred after this court ruling. What the district court found was that Kanji was sophisticated, knowledgeable, world-class, and had intimate knowledge of this project. For these reasons, Kanji is being held liable. It sounds a bit like a status crime. The fact is, Kanji never proposed, never intended to go forward with a project that did not have a valid PSD permit. What we think happened in this case was that the district court rewarded Sierra Club for, in essence, having uncovered an Orwellian thought crime, for having peered into the mind of Kanji. Now, if this were, if you'll pardon the point, if this were a comparative literature course, imposing a $500,000 Kafkaesque penalty for an Orwellian thought crime might earn points for originality. But unfortunately, this is a very serious legal matter, which gives rise, in our view, to at least four constitutional violations, and which, on grounds of abuse of discretion and failure to follow appropriate legal standards, as well as a violation of public policy, leads us to pray this court to vacate the district's order. Let us turn to the major legal reasons for vacating in this case. There are four constitutional issues. First, subject matter jurisdiction. Second, violation of the Eighth Amendment prohibition on excessive fines. Third is a violation of Article 2 under the Appointments Clause. And finally, a violation of separation of powers. Under subject matter jurisdiction, the leading case is Clean Coalition versus TXU, which we cited and which we believe Sierra Club did not address adequately. In this case, the Fifth Circuit held that pre-construction citizen suits against facilities that have obtained a permit are outside of subject matter jurisdiction under the Clean Air Act.
But we've already found that there was subject matter jurisdiction. Unless there's some plain error of law in our original decision, I mean, we have jurisdiction in this case.
That's fine. As an officer of the court, we're obligated to point out a competing circuit's opposite decision on facts that are virtually the same, Your Honor. Would you like me to move on from subject matter jurisdiction then?
Yes.
The Eighth Amendment prohibition on excessive fines. The essence of this argument is that when the goal of the court is punishment, that is deterrence or retribution, a civil penalty, including attorney's fees, constitutes punishment under the excessive fines clause. Therefore, we have punishment in this case. This standard was adopted by the U.S. Supreme Court in U.S. v. Halper. Civil penalties may be within the statutory minimum, but just because they are, that's no safe harbor. They can still be excessive for purposes of the Eighth Amendment. The key to understanding the Eighth Amendment is that there must be linkage between the individual's own conduct and the culpability that is found. In addition, this court has held in Towers versus City of Chicago, 1999, that proportionality must be determined on a case-by-case basis in order to properly link fines to the punishment.
Well, the district court, you know, imposed a $100,000 fine. It could have been a fine in the millions of dollars. And under the Clean Water Act, it's not just to punish culpable individuals. I mean, not just to extract compensation or restore the status quo, but it's also utilized to punish culpable individuals and to deter future violations. And the court looked at all that, and the fine is substantially reduced.
Your Honor, we respect.
Look at what it could have been on a daily basis.
We respectfully submit, Your Honor, that when a party has done nothing wrong, a fine and a penalty of even $1 is excessive under the Eighth Amendment. In this case, Kanji did nothing wrong. What would this court have a developer do under similar set of facts? Kanji stopped as soon as Sierra Club filed the notice to sue. Kanji relied on IEPA, and they have a legal right to rely on IEPA. There is no showing that Kanji had any prior knowledge that this permit did expire or could have expired. I'd like to reserve my time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms., is it Lure or Lair?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kira Lair, and I represent the Sierra Club. There are only two questions before this Court today. It's one, whether the District Court abused its discretion when it awarded approximately $375,000 in attorney's fees to Sierra Club to be paid jointly and severally by Kanji and its co-defendants down below. And two, whether it abused its discretion when it imposed a $100,000 fine for Kanji's and its co-defendants' violations of the Clean Air Act. The fact that Kanji violated the Clean Air Act was decided by the Southern District of Illinois in October of 2006 and was the subject of litigation for nearly 4 years thereafter. No law supports Kanji's challenge of the District Court's ability to impose fines and fees against it for those Clean Air Act violations. I will first address the issue of attorney's fees. Kanji conflates the issue of attorney's fees with fines, but the issues are separate. The Clean Air Act explicitly allows district courts in issuing any final action brought under subsection A of section 304 of the Clean Air Act to award costs of litigation whenever the court determines such award is appropriate. Courts have interpreted this provision to mean that an award of fees is appropriate if the party seeking fees obtained some success on the merits. Sierra Club has obtained success on the merits at every stage of this lengthy, lengthy litigation. Originally in the district court, before this court in 2008, on rehearing to this court, up to the United States Supreme Court, back down to the district court, at every single level. At every single level, Kanji was intimately involved and participated fully as a defendant in that case. In fact, Kanji was responsible for driving up most of Sierra Club's fees in this case. Kanji filed a motion to dismiss itself. It joined in its co-defendants' motions for leave to amend its answer and affirmative defenses, filed a motion to exclude the testimony of Sierra Club's expert, filed a motion to strike the testimony of Craig Fessler, filed a motion to dismiss the complaint in its entirety, filed a motion for summary judgment. Kanji lost every single one of those motions, and Sierra Club prevailed on every single one of those motions. Kanji drew out this litigation with repeated requests for delays at every stage of this case. Another issue that occurs with respect to attorney's fees is whether the plaintiff substantially furthered the goals of the Clean Air Act. There's no question in this case that Sierra Club substantially furthered the goals of the Clean Air Act, because without its action, Kanji and its co-defendants would have continued their efforts at construction with an expired permit. Thus, we believe the district court's award of attorney's fees was reasonable and appropriate, and it did not abuse its discretion. With respect to the $100,000 penalty to be used for a beneficial mitigation project, a different section of the Clean Air Act gives district courts broad discretion to apply appropriate civil penalties. As this court held in U.S. versus B&W Investment Properties, the Seventh Circuit begins with the consideration of a fine by calculating the maximum penalty that could be imposed. Sierra Club calculated a maximum penalty of over $41 million in this case, which the district court agreed with and which Kanji did not contest. From that amount, Sierra Club requested only $100,000 in acknowledgement of the fact that construction was not completed and pollutants were not emitted. Um, That modest penalty is appropriate and was well within the district court's discretion to impose. Kanji's argument that it should, as a developer, which it uses as some sort of term that, as if there was something in the statutes that says developers may not be assessed anything. A developer is completely innocent of all wrongs. Developers cannot be considered to be have found to have violated the Clean Air Act. That's simply not true. There's no law that holds that, and there's no requirement. The Clean Air Act allows any person to sue any other person for constructing or proposing to construct a power plant without a PSD permit. Kanji, from 2002 onward, was driving the construction of this power plant.
When did everybody find out the permit was lapsed?
It depends on how you look at it.
Well, if you look at it anyway at all, tell me, when did people know when it lapsed?
The regulations were very clear. When the permit...
Let me try it one more time.
Okay.
When, at what point in time, did people become aware that the permit had lapsed?
Different people became... The permit lapsed either January or February of 2003.
When did people become aware? Was Sierra Club aware of it all that time? All the time during the litigation?
All the time during the litigation?
Were they aware of this when they filed this? Were they aware of the fact that it had lapsed?
That was the basis for Sierra Club's claim, yes.
When did they find out?
Sierra Club began investigating this claim in November of 2004.
And when did they find out that it lapsed?
As soon as they began investigating.
When the minute they started to investigate, they found it immediately that it lapsed.
They found that 18 months had passed in which no construction had been commenced and no construction and a period longer than 18 months had elapsed before anything even resembling construction had occurred.
So what did they do?
Filed a notice of intent to sue.
And then everything stopped.
It's not clear. I don't know quite what it means by an everything stopped.
Well, okay, you tell me what did happen.
And Sierra Club filed its notice of intent to sue in January of 2005.
Right. And then what happened?
I have no idea what Kanji did in January of 2005. The evidence in the record shows that it was continuing to negotiate power purchase agreements for output from the plant through 2006. So I don't know quite what it means when Kanji says that they stopped.
Okay.
They did not stop. They stopped digging a hole because the hole was filled in again. They didn't try to dig a third hole, but they did continue trying to negotiate with Black & Veatch to complete the engineering, procurement, and construction contract, and they publicly made statements repeatedly that they were intending to continue construction of this plant.
But they didn't and couldn't.
Because the court enjoined them from doing so.
So that their discussion back and forth was academic at best.
Regarding...
Yeah, the bottom line is they didn't try to dig another hole or anything. They basically essentially were frozen. I think that's what Judge Bauer's point is. They didn't do anything afterward, not anything active in terms of the hole. They knew that they did not have the permit lapsed, even though they had an argument against it, and they continued to negotiate and everything. But they weren't doing anything at the site.
They were not doing anything at the site, largely.
So they obeyed the court order, essentially.
Well, there was no court order at the time.
Well, the injunction. The injunction is an order. I mean, the court entered an order.
In 2006, towards the end of 2006. So from the time
Yeah, but once they got the notice, they didn't do anything else. They didn't try to further the hole once they got the notice from the Sierra Club, right?
Not to my knowledge.
Right. Then finally the injunction was entered.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do anything to, like, try to dig a new hole or anything. They followed the court's order.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons, and in fact, I think one of the main reasons, why the penalty is so low. When the $41 million penalty could have been assessed, the district court reduced that amount to only $100,000 to do exactly what Your Honor noted, deter future violations, including future violations by these particular defendants who believed their actions in continuing to propose to construct this plant were well within their rights and that they had done nothing wrong.
I thought the permit was still in existence.
Yes.
But there you are. That's punishable by a fine of $100,000. You think something and it's not true. They had some predicate for their thought, didn't they? There was a permit at one time.
There was a permit at one time and very clear regulations about it, what exactly had to be done in order to maintain the validity of that permit.
But not by them. By somebody else.
The regulations were clear to everyone, and this court found that no reasonable fact finder could have determined that what the defendants were doing constituted commencing construction within the act.
I know. I was on the panel.
Kanji tries to minimize its particular responsibility in this case by alleging that it had that it was just following orders. But that's not what this case has shown. Kanji.
Well, the district court found that, you know, didn't find that they were acting in bad faith, right?
No, he just evidenced a lack of good faith as a reason not to further mitigate the penalty. There was no finding of bad faith. But there were findings that Kanji took actions to further construction and construction-like activities because it did so with respect to this case. It entered into agreements to develop and purchase this project. The development agreement created a management structure consisting of only three people, two of which were Kanji employees. The development agreement noted that if there was a lack of consensus among the individuals on the committee, Kanji had the final say. The development agreement explicitly stated that Kanji assumed complete and total control over the development of the project. Kanji negotiated and signed the power purchase agreements. They negotiated with Black & Veatch. They attempted to purchase the land on which the project was to be sited. They kept the project afloat financially. They directed J.M. Jones to dig the second hole in September of 2004. Kanji was not taking orders to construct this plant. It was giving them at all times.
So your position is that they should have just stopped everything, had no discussions, based on the fact that the notice was given and the injunction had been issued. They should have just stopped anything because they should have recognized that they were not going to prevail.
I think Kanji in particular had different options. Kanji was not the permit holder.
Let me stick my nose in one more time with Judge Williams. Did they do anything after the injunction was entered to further any contractual business with this project?
They were trying.
After the injunction is an issue.
Oh, after the injunction has been issued? After the injunction, no, but the calculation of the fine stopped with the injunction. Sorry.
I understand that. I just want to know. They're negotiating up until the time the injunction is issued. Now we quit. We don't do anything. But the discussions before and didn't result in any activity, just negotiation. None of this affected the land at all.
Not through lack of trying on the part of Kanji and its co-defendants.
Or would it have been advanced with any help from the air company? I mean, the point of the matter is nothing happened.
Again, I think the point is that they tried to make something happen and that they continually engaged in efforts to do so, and the fact that they were not able to do so. Kanji's constitutional arguments, I believe, are misplaced. The majority of them have either been decided, as the court noted with respect to subject matter jurisdiction and the separation of powers, waived because they weren't raised below, that's the excessive fines clause and the appointments clause, or simply not supported by any law at all whatsoever. With respect to the Clean that relates to subject matter jurisdiction, the Clean Coalition case is simply not on point with respect to this case. It involved an application for a PSD permit and a substantive challenge to that application. This court, the Fifth Circuit, did not address anything near the facts that are present in this case. This time I'd like to turn to my conclusion. The district court was right. It exercised its discretion to award $375,000 in attorney's fees to Sierra Club because Sierra Club prevailed at every stage. It imposed a modest fine, less than 1% of the maximum available, to deter future violations. The district court did not abuse its discretionary authority, and this court should affirm its determination. Is there any further questions? Thank you.
No, thank you, Ms. Lair. Mr. Sobel, how much time does he have?
I'm sorry?
Four.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. We have just seen the slippery slope presented to this court that is fundamental to the problem facing this court. On the one hand, no one can answer the question, what would a better developer have done other than stop at the points at which Kanji stopped?
What did your client do to ascertain whether there was a permit in existence, still in existence, before you started?
Contacted IEPA and was informed by IEPA that it was a perfectly valid permit. In fact, as of September 30th, 2004, there was an email that was sent by IEPA to EnviroPower and passed along to Kanji saying that the project was qualified as in construction.
In your position,
2 months later, Sierra...
Your client's position is that Sierra's rights in this case, standing and rights, are precisely that of the people who told you to go ahead.
Right.
That's your position.
Our position is that we had a right to rely on IEPA.
And
perhaps
they
IEPA
have no better rights than IEPA.
That's right. And perhaps IEPA was wrong, but until there was a determination of that, it was impossible to know. There are facts that are missing here. Sierra Club did not know of the existence of the Black & Veatch contract at the time they issued their notice of intent to sue. The developer believed that the contract was a sufficient contract to satisfy the second prong of the in-construction requirement under the Clean Air Act. The fact that they were proven wrong as a matter of law, and it took 4 years of litigation to establish that, simply underscores the complexity of the factual determination associated with this issue. But there was no leisure demand. There was no one playing a game here. There was no one who injured the environment. There was no plan to injure the environment. There was no plan to exceed the emission standards. This $41 million boogeyman is something that we really must address, because we were told by Ms. Lair that the calculation of the fine stopped at the date of the injunction. That's not true. It continued all the way through this court's hearing of the appeal and the appeal on a writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but the court didn't impose it based on that number of days.
Correct, but they created a boogeyman to make the $100,000 look more reasonable.
You still have another minute, yeah. But the fact of the matter is the court didn't buy that. And technically, they were correct that fees could have been assessed, even though it would not have made sense. Technically, they were correct.
No, we don't think so, because it isn't...
Did it on a daily basis.
But there's no continuing violation here. The Northern District Court, in a case that I will present under Rule 28J after this argument, since this issue came up, just earlier this year in Midwest Generating, indicated that there is no continuing violation for a permit violation when there's no injury to the environment. And they cited a number of other district court cases across the U.S. that agree with this. I will present that in a Rule 28J submission after my oral argument. Are there other questions?
There don't appear to be any. Thank you, Mr. Sobel. Thank you, Ms. Lair. We will take the case under advisement.
Thank you very much.
Court will stand in recess till the next session.